I think there's been nothing in all these years that Mr. Fitzpatrick has even remotely put one fact in front of anybody that charges anybody with crime or with support from the crime. Now, you can ask this gentleman right here, Mr. Cunningham, did you know Mr. Fitzpatrick wanted to, his purpose was to get you indicted? And he can say yes or no. And he says, yes, that's the purpose. And so you can then ask him, yes, and that's the reason why he didn't want to let him go for the grand jury. But getting into these questions about who was committing this or committing that is beyond what we're here today about. And that is the final court ruling decision.
Can I say one more thing?
No. That's it. Bring it here, buddy.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You may be seated.
All right. So I'm going to rephrase my question. Were you aware Commander Fitzpatrick was accusing you of an indictable offense? That he was telling you that he wanted to go to the grand jury because he was accusing you of an indictable offense?
Yeah.
And yet you did not recuse yourself from that proceeding, yes or no?
No. Yeah, I told you. There was never what I knew to be an indictable offense, at least against the individual petition.
All right, now, does not Tennessee Statute 4012-104 require the grand jury to impanel three people when someone is bringing a petition?
Yes.
So you didn't have the authority all by yourself to determine that the offenses that were being charged against you were or were not indictable offenses, did you? You did not have the authority to make the determination on your own whether or not the charges being alleged against you were indictable offenses.
Again, we're getting back to the question which the court has ruled upon that being the grand jury informant is not an indictable offense. That's the law. You stated that several times and it is a mistake.
I am not asking him if he's ever heard the question. The question is, did you have the authority by yourself to determine whether or not the charges against you were an indictable offense?
Well, I could read the petition and see if it was my objection and that text would be sustained.
You agree that Tennessee law requires you to impanel three grand jurors when a petition is brought to the grand jury, correct?
At least 3 years.
In January of 2013, did you do that?
I don't think January 2013 is one of the petitions that we talked about. 14.
Correct.
2014.
This year. January grand jury meeting of 2014.
No, we can refer to an exhibit, so at least we'll know what we're talking about.
your cross-examination.
Thank you. In January of 2014, when Mr. Fitzpatrick attempted to present the petition to the grand jury, did you present that petition to three grand jury members?
No.
In fact, was that granted? Isn't it true that that petition was sealed?
Yes.
That petition was never even read by them, correct?
No, sir.
And do you have the authority to deny Commander Fitzpatrick the right to petition the grand jury on your own?
I did not deny him the right to petition the grand jury.
Please answer the question. Do you have the authority to deny him that right on your own?
No.
In February of 2014, did the Commander Fitzpatrick attempt to petition the grand jury?
He was there. I don't think he ever made an attempt to petition the grand jury, but he was there for that purpose.
He was there for that purpose, and he was...
I'm assuming that. He didn't tell me that, but he had a wife or whatever. That I assumed that was the purpose he was there, yes.
Isn't it true that you did not allow him to present this petition to the grand jury in February 2014?
That's correct.
Do you have the authority on your own to deny the commander his right to petition the grand jury?
I don't think that I denied him his petition to petition the grand jury, sir. Can I explain why I told him he could not come in there? What I said to Commander Fitzpatrick that day was that he had been there four times. The reason that his petition...
Your Honor, we're getting into matters that were discussed this morning.
Do you have a question? You've got a right to answer.
Actually, I asked a question.
Well,
he asked me to explain.
I think the question is possible yes or no. You can answer yes or no, and then you can explain the answer. So please ask this question.
Do you have the authority on your own to deny Commander Fitzpatrick the right to petition the grand jury?
Yes.
Just a moment ago you said no to the exact same question.
And I'm assuming that you're asking me that you're not going to let him explain. If you let him explain, you'll understand my answer.
So you're saying that there's...
No, I'd like him to be able to explain at this point.
Yes or no?
He has explained yes, and that needs no explanation.
Thank you. Now, in February, you told Commander Fitzpatrick you are not going to present any more petitions to the grand jury. Is that correct?
I believe I said that.
You said that more than once to him. Is that correct?
I don't know if I said it more than once, but I do believe I said it.
One moment, please.
Your words. Quote, I am protected by the statutes against retaliation. When you file things on me as a private citizen, you are, in my opinion, committing a felony. You will make no more presentments to the grand jury. I will not, as a grand jury foreman, accept any more presentations from you. Are those your words?
That sounds correct.
Do you have the authority to prevent any citizen from petitioning the grand jury?
Yes, after he has abused his petitioning rights and after he's been there multiple times, I do believe I have authority to make that determination.
Please showing the witness statute 4012-104 application to testify by persons having knowledge of commission of the crime. Is that the statute granting all citizens the right to petition the grand jury?
Here.
Show me where in that statute it gives you the grand juror authority on your own to deny any citizen the right to petition?
It was not giving me the right to deny any citizen the right to petition. I didn't believe it gives me the right to determine when a petitioner's rights have been met. And under the statute, if I could see it, I'll explain my answer. Where it says any person had a knowledge of proof of the commission of public offense, triable or indictable in the county may testify before the grand jury. This man had been there four times. And I believe that his rights under this statute have been more than met. And that was my reasonable interpretation that he was not coming back because his right had been met.
So you have, by yourself, Jeff Cunningham, the right to determine when someone has exhausted their right to petition the government. Is that what you're testifying?
I make that determination in this case here.
If you look at the statute, under Part C, it says the person, referring to the petitioner, shall designate two grand jurors who shall look for him comprise of panels to determine whether the knowledge warrants investigation. Did I read that correctly?
Yes. Yeah.
So the statute explicitly says that at least two other grand jurors must, on every occasion, be here to determine whether the knowledge warrants an investigation, correct?
That's correct.
So you don't have the authority to determine by yourself that a citizen can't petition?
I have the authority to determine when his rights under the statute are going to be on this one.
Based on what? What's your authority? Where, authority doesn't come from Jeff Cunningham, correct?
I assume that the authority is the person in Part B, where it says the person had a knowledge of proof shall appear before the foreman.
Yes.
And when he appeared before me, on the day that you're talking about, in whatever that last date was, when I just read me my words, when I told him he wasn't coming back, he appeared before me, I made a determination that looking at his activity before the grand jury over a year and a half period, his rights under 40-12-104 to appear with knowledge and proof of the commission of public offense, triable or indictable in the county, had been satisfied, and he had been afforded those rights. So I don't think any reasonable person could look at this and say, you may come back here 1,000 times, especially when he has been there with 4 petitions that has yet to present any evidence.
So you're telling me that you, Jeff Cunningham, have the authority to tell someone that what the right the legislature has given to them is limited by the number of times that Jeff Cunningham decides?
No, I'm telling you as a foreperson that I have the right, I believe, to determine that the rights have been met and satisfied by the group of the committee to which he's trying to attend when he's been there 4 times previously.
What law says that?
I don't know what law it is, but every law, sir, has to be interpreted reasonably.
And doesn't this law specifically say that you have the duty to impanel at least 2 other grand jurors?
Sure.
And it certainly doesn't say that you have the duty to tell, or the authority to tell someone to never come back.
And we did impanel grand jurors in this case. I'm looking at his totality of the dealings with the grand jury, sir. I'm in a tough place. I've got this guy on one side.
Objection, Your Honor.
Objection, there's no question, Your Honor, I'm sure.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question. This law specifically says you have a duty to impanel 2 people. It is not correct. Is that correct?
I believe you have asked one right question. Mr. Cunningham, my understanding your answer is that you believe that you have the authority to give somebody to come forward before the grand jury because the person having knowledge of proof shall appear before the court. Is that your interpretation?
I didn't hear your answer.
Did you answer the question about your authority to deny Mr. Fitzpatrick further it's a grand jury, is the person having knowledge of proof shall appear before the court. If you interpret that to mean that you have to make a decision at that time about whether you will go forward and perform to other people.
Correct.
That you believe is your authority.
Yes, sir.
But that disagrees with the statute, doesn't it?
Now you're asking me to interpret the law. That's not objection.
All right, I'll rephrase. Does the statute not immediately after that portion say the person shall, the person, not the form, the person petitioning shall designate two grand jurors who shall, with the foreman, shall compromise a panel to determine whether or not knowledge warrants investigation? Did I read that correctly?
Is that a question?
Yes, did I read that correctly?
On part C.
Part C.
Yeah.
Thank you. Now, you told Commander Fitzpatrick that he won't be coming back in February, correct?
Correct.
Isn't it true that every time he came to the grand jury, at least the times that you actually looked at his petition contained different allegations and different facts?
The first one was different from the second one. The third one, I think had some additional facts in it, and the fourth one had additional facts. So that would be a correct statement. It had some of the same facts, sometimes some additional facts.
Now, you identified several things that Commander Fitzpatrick alleged in his various petitions to the government that you claim are false statements, correct?
Yes.
Now, you don't know whether or not they were lies because you don't know what Commander Fitzpatrick knew, correct?
I don't know what statement you're talking about, so I'm not talking. Would you give me an example or specific, and I would be glad to answer, sir.
Yes. There was a new panel of jurors. members of the county for the benefit. And it's also correct that the grand jury in McLean County has one group on even months and one in a different group on odd months, correct?
That's correct.
So there's different people in the grand jury.
Every other week.
So Commander Fitzpatrick's desire to talk to grand jurors in November 2013 versus January 2014 reflects, at a minimum, a desire to talk to a new set of grand jurors, correct?
I don't know what his desire was. We haven't talked about his desire.
But if he was to petition in November and then petition in January, that would be petitioning to two different groups of people.
Yes, it would be.
And then if he came back in February, that would be another group of people.
Yes.
You stated at several points that the McLean County Grand Jury lacked jurisdiction to address some of the matters that were raised by the Commander Fitzpatrick, right?
Yeah.
However, is it true that crimes that Commander Fitzpatrick alleges are occurring to him while he lives in McLean County are certainly within the jurisdiction of the McLean County Grand Jury? Is that true?
Should be, yeah.
One, for instance, you said that starting with the November 2012 petition. Could you again please point out the specific facts that you believe were incorrect alleged by Commander Fitzpatrick?
Oh, one thing. is, I think you're talking about maybe this, right? It says, in fact, no judge has issued an appointing order for the Macon County, Tennessee grand jury since 2011. In 2011, Judge Reed did appoint me to what I assume was a two-year term. I thought that order would be continuing beyond 2011, 2012, 2013.
But the statement was that there hasn't been an appointing order since 2011, correct?
Yes.
And that is a correct statement? Yes?
I'm not trying to be difficult. I just think there are two ways to read that. When I read it, I felt like it commanded Fitzpatrick was saying that my order did not go beyond 2011. But I see what you're saying now, that you could read this as a true statement. Yes.
The statement is correct. Yes.
If you want to interpret that.
All right. Now, let's start at the beginning. Let's go back to the. I don't seem to have it. I haven't given you my copy.
Yes, sir. Which one are you looking for?
The November 2012, the earliest petition that was noticed exhibit. We are on the petition to the grand jury, November 20th, 2012. Specifically, what, I'm trying to find my notes, what you said was untrue. To tell you the truth, I don't believe you pointed out anything in this petition that you said was an incorrect statement.
I'm not sure I said that. I don't have. Let me look at the petition quickly.
As far as you know, there's nothing in that petition that's incorrect. Nothing that you testified about earlier pointed out anything in that petition that's incorrect. Is that right?
I don't want to read the petition before I answer that because I don't have the warrant, so I'm just going to go on it.
I would draw the question, Your Honor. You agree that this is a petition to address the government for redress of grievances, or a petition to the government for redress of grievances,
correct?
And that is a protected activity under the Constitution.
I would agree with you.
Thank you. All right. The next one was. Going in front of chronological order, February 19, 2013, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, you said that there were no facts alleged, but you never actually gave Commander Fitzpatrick the opportunity to support his allegations within the testimony for this particular petition, did you?
He was given the obligation, sir, to do that. He placed it in the.
So, you're telling me that this thick petition certainly has lots of allegations, correct?
Yes.
And you didn't give Commander Fitzpatrick the opportunity to testify at all to the grand jury, correct?
About the allegations that you gave him.
The only person that Commander Fitzpatrick got to interact with in the grand jury for this petition was you, correct?
I believe so.
He didn't get to pick two grand jurors that would consider the petition along with you, did he?
He did not. I chose him.
And that's a violation of the rules, correct?
It is not in compliance with the portion of the rule. It's a practice that has been here in the county for the last, ever since I've been away.
Just to be clear, both the November 20th, 2012 petition and the February 19th, 2013 petition are not part of the aggravated perjury count, correct?
That's an argument from the jury. I don't think the witness can testify to that.
You're against that. Showing the witness the indictment or clean copy of the indictment. Please read count two of the indictment.
Owner about the 12th day of March. Well, count number two, Grand Jurors in the County of Tennessee, duly in town in the storm, upon their oath, we further present that Walter Francis Fitzpatrick III, born about the 12th day of March 2014, in the County of Tennessee, before the finding of this indictment, did not lawfully, intentionally, or knowingly, with intent to deceive, make a false statement under oath, bearing rank and next to an official proceeding, and the false statement is material in violation of TCA 13-16-703, all of which is against the taste and dignity of the state of Tennessee.
Alright. On or about March 12th, did you have any interaction with Commander Fitzpatrick personally?
No, I didn't.
Did you get any communications from him on or about March 12th?
No.
So, the only evidence in support of, or I should say, the only petition that is relevant to the aggravated perjury charge is the petition filed by Commander Fitzpatrick on March 12th.
Certainly the petition is relevant. I wasn't there on that since it was decided, so I don't really know how to say that. To me,
well, let me put it another way. The November 20, 2012 petition to the grand jury certainly didn't occur on March 12th.
No, there are no numbers to that.
Okay. And the February 19, 2013 petition to the grand jury certainly is not relevant to the aggravated perjury charge, correct?
Agreed.
And the petition to the grand jury on December 17, 2013 is not relevant to the grand jury or to the aggravated perjury charge. And the March 18th petition to the grand jury is certainly not relevant to March 12th aggravated perjury charge.
I don't have an understanding of March 18th, so I don't believe
so. So any false statements that happen to be in any of these petitions, other than March 12th petition for protective order, are irrelevant to the aggravated perjury charge, correct?
Not necessarily. I think the jury has the purview to determine the credibility of the defendant, his propensity to misstate things and other things other than the petition is sent. So they can consider, based on his credibility,
that they find that the defendant. That's what matters to Manny's. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the elements that you're going to have to consider in the aggravated perjury charge is that the statement must have been made under oath. So when you consider that position, you will look to see if any statements were made under oath. Approach, Your Honor? On March 12th.
Thank you.
March 12th.
Thank you. showing the witness a copy of the petition for protective order. Let's start with the February petition for protective order. Showing exhibit S1.
That's the petition.
The protective order from February. Correct.
Thank you.
back to the November 20th, 2012. Oh, I'm sorry, already covered that one. The next one in order was the Sun to the February 19th, 2013 petition. We've already established that the pointing order statement is correct. Is there anything else in this petition that you thought was an incorrect statement that you testified about previously? I don't want anything new. I'm asking you if there's anything that you testified that was false. Statements from Commander Fitzpatrick in that document. Pointed out as false during the earlier testimony.
I'm a little confused. Are you asking me if I have other claims of false statements? Or are you asking me?
No, I'm specifically saying when you looked at that document on your direct examination, can you please refresh our recollection what statements in this document you point to as being incorrect statements from the defendant.
I'm asking what David is referring to.
This is the February 19th, 2013 petition to the grand jury. It is the second petition to the grand jury that was presented, I believe, out of four.
I'll have to look at the petition, so please
take the time. Asking specifically about things that you pointed out as false in your earlier testimony. The only thing I had in my notes was the appointing order issue, which we've already established, was not actually a correct statement.
Page 31, I think I pointed out, I did a state law prohibits Jeff Finnegan from appearing in his Tennessee state jury in his current year. I believe that to be false.
You believe that to be an incorrect statement?
Yes.
You have absolutely no ability to know whether or not Commander Fitzpatrick knew that that was incorrect.
It almost an impossible question for him to answer.
Yeah, this is right. The next statement is Finnegan served as a ballistic grand jury foreman throughout the entire calendar year 2012. I believe that to be not a true statement, sir.
An incorrect statement.
Incorrect statement. At this writing, there is no judicial appointment from the person to hold the former state during term during calendar year 2013. I believe that to be an incorrect statement. And Cunningham successfully blocked my petition. I think we talked about that.
Let's talk about that one for a second. Cunningham successfully blocked my petition. You would certainly agree that the petition wasn't presented to the full grand jury, correct?
Yes.
All right. And you would agree that Commander Fitzpatrick was not in the grand jury room during the proceedings, correct? Mr. Cunningham? I understand you're trying to multitask. Can you please answer the question for pay attention for just a moment before we go back to the...
Well, I was looking to answer your question.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Please.
You asked me about when he was at the grand jury in the presentation, and I was trying to figure out which one of these statements
just ask the question again? Well, the question was, which statements did you identify in the previous testimony as false?
Oh, I know. It was unattempted successful bought by the prison here for this grand jury. He says in August that it was incorrect. And again, in November 2012, and then you asked the question.
Yes. Which was the petition was not actually heard by the full grand jury, and you said that's correct.
In November of 2012?
Well, this particular petition. The petition didn't lead to an indictment, did it?
Right. And are you talking about this petition, the one that I'm reading from 2013, or are you talking about, sir, November 2012?
Well, let me ask another question. Did either of those petitions lead to an indictment?
No, sir.
And was Mr. Patrick in the grand jury room at any point during the grand jury proceedings for either one of those petitions?
November 2012 or February 2013?
Correct, sir.
No, sir.
So Mr. Fitzpatrick would not know whether or not you were responsible for blocking those petitions. He would not know that you weren't responsible. He hadn't seen them.
Your Honor, I'm going to object to what Mr. Fitzpatrick knows. He may not know.
He wasn't in the... He was not in the jury room at the time you were deliberating on his petitions at either one of those times.
No, sir. Mr. Fitzpatrick knew that there were jurors in there besides me.
Okay. Now, again, this is a petition to the government for redress of grievances, correct?
Yes.
Moving on to March 18th.
March is the
19th. Yeah, March 18th, 2013. It's the 19th. Now, you cited the first, on page 3, you cited the first sentence. Mr. Cunningham is right now in violation of state and federal law and should be standing in this room as you review my sworn affidavit as being an incorrect statement. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, you testified just a few moments ago on cross-examination that, in fact, you did not follow the law on at least a couple of different counts in the way you were presiding over the grand jury, correct?
In the order of the...
And, yes.
I did not follow the exact statute.
And also in regard to Rule 6, if you knew that you were being charged with what at least could potentially be an indictable offense, you should have removed yourself.
Your Honor, I can review my objections.
Okay. All right, well, just based on the first one, this statement is true.
No. This is now, you asked me about something that, so you say that me standing in the room makes me in violation of the state and federal law. How does that mean a violation of state?
Is right now in violation of state and federal law. Should he be standing in this room?
I think what he's referring to. Can I tell you what I thought he was referring to? I think he's referring to the same thing he has been throughout. Is that he's saying that I'm acting as an illegal, wrongfully appointed grand jury person. If I were in the law, in other words, he's wanting to leave, but I'm there, what he says is I'm improperly appointed, which he says makes him illegal.
Do you have any doubt that he believed that statement?
I don't know what he believes. He sure acts like he believes.
But you would agree that you have already answered that question. Again, this is a petition to the government for redress agreements, correct?
Correct.
Moving on to December 17th, 2013 petition. Actually, I think about it. Let me put my notes here. Directing you back to the March petition, on page 1, you identified the paragraph or the sentence, individuals who are otherwise recognized as a juror is accused of a criminal activity. That juror loses their standing as a juror to hear the case wherein their name appears. Now, isn't that a statement of opinion rather than a statement of fact?
I think you made it if you wanted to do it, to take it as a fact. I don't know. It doesn't say it's my opinion, he just makes a statement that.
Isn't this statement true under Rule 6? That if someone, if a juror is accused of a crime, a grand juror is accused of a crime and disqualified from the proceedings on that particular crime, is that not a true statement?
Yes.
Now, you made a lot of allegations that may or may not be true, but you certainly, like, my life is at risk coming here today. Do you have any way of knowing whether or not that's false?
Sir, I didn't make an allegation about his life.
No, I'm saying,
you read
pretty much this entire petition.
Sure.
And you really have no way of knowing if most of these allegations are true or not, correct?
I think I previously identified the ones that I felt were untrue, if I didn't, but no, I didn't know his life. I don't know if his life is at risk.
Well, that's in part because you never actually let him testify, correct? You have no idea what possible facts there might be to support these allegations because you didn't let him testify ever.
Well, that's not relevant necessarily. That's an end of the decision.
Back.
wouldn't mind another signature in the council.
Okay. So then in the January, when the January grand jury convened in January 2012 or 2014, this year, there was a new group of grand jurors, correct?
This is a new group in January.
Okay. And that new group of grand jurors never got to see Commander Fitzpatrick's petition at all, correct?
No, they did not.
And that was the first grand jury that you blocked the petition from being seen even by a 2-3 person panel, correct?
Yes, because that was the first grand jury in which Fitzpatrick had failed to give his petition to me to present to the grand jury. He refused to do that, that's my recollection.
And you were aware that the reason he didn't give it to you was because he was accusing you of an indicted offense.
Now, plan objection.
He could say yes, he was aware. Were you, you were aware, so were you not?
I was aware.
Yes, sir.
All right, back to the December 17th, 2013 petition.
Thank you.
He's free to file all these petitions in front of the session.
Now, you said that you don't control law enforcement during your testimony. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Isn't it true that during January 2014, after the grand jury met, January 2014, you instructed officers of this court to remove Mr. Fitzpatrick from the building?
No, sir.
One moment.
You want me to explain so you won't have to play a tape?
Sure.
What I said was to clear the hallway. I never instructed anybody to be able to remove from the building. I do not recollect saying that, sir.
All right. Is that your recollection?
No. That was your thought.
I'm going to play a short, a little over a minute, tape recording of an interaction, and I'm going to ask you afterward to identify whether or not this is your voice.
Pass the ball to you. State law says that a grand jury.
Again, you're telling me what state law is, and I pass the ball to you.
What do you have today?
Go ahead.
He
doesn't want you to take it because he says you are the person.
We're going to dismiss the grand jury.
Did you just see what happened? The grand jury is required to allow me.
You need to remove him from the room.
Why?
First, the person that spoke saying, what do you have today? Was that your voice?
Sorry.
The person that spoke saying, what do you have today on the table? That was your voice. And we're going to dismiss the grand jury.
Yes.
That was your voice. And please remove this person. That was your voice.
I believe so, yes.
Okay. And Mr. Fitzpatrick was in fact escorted out of the building at that time, correct?
I don't know. I went back in the grand jury room. Right. We were in an office, in the congressman's office. He didn't come up into from out of the hallway into the amphitheater.
Actually, you know what? You already answered the question. I don't know.
Your Honor, I think that might answer the finish answering the question.
He's right. I'm just going to say to you, and I'm going to graduate.
Now, you testified that you don't control the law enforcement, but you certainly seem to control law enforcement that day, correct?
I think on the around the grand jury entryway, I think I had every right to ask.
I didn't ask you if you had every right to ask, and I'm not even saying you didn't have the right to ask. I'm saying you did have the ability to control law enforcement as a grand jury foreman, correct?
No, I'm not over for security, sir. That guy that said you moving down the hall yourself, they don't work for me. That's what I was trying to tell you, is that I said that I wanted to enter, they're there to do a job of security. They could have refused me at any time when I said that. I doubt that they would, but they could have. They don't work for me, and they're not under my authority.
So testimony is that you, as a grand jury foreman, to use a certain, stick your head out the door and say, remove that man from the building, close the door with full expectation that officers with weapons are going to actually remove that man from the building, and that you don't believe you have the ability to control law enforcement as a grand jury foreman. Is that correct?
I don't control law enforcement as a grand jury foreman, sir. Never have thought that, and I never have.
Did you have any doubt that Mr. Fitzpatrick was going to be removed?
I felt that would be a good job, dude.
Okay. Now, you spoke with Mr. Fitzpatrick after the February of this year grand jury proceedings, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that was the time you told Mr. Fitzpatrick repeatedly that he wouldn't petition the government, or wouldn't petition, bring a petition to the, you wouldn't accept the petition as grand jury foreman, correct?
I'm not sure about exact words, but that's pretty close.
And at that time, you actually had walked down the hall with Mr. Fitzpatrick, correct? Away from the jury room.
No, my recollection was that Mr. Fitzpatrick was, when this doorway comes out in the hallway right out here, that Mr. Fitzpatrick was down that way, and that I came out of the doorway from the clerk's office and walked towards him. He was beyond, towards the front of the courthouse. And I don't know how far, but he was down that way, because I know that we walked that way. It seemed like there was a fire extinguisher or a door or something. Anyway, we walked down, myself and Officer Preston Brown walked down towards him. I did not walk off with him. I keep paying to meet others.
Okay. But there was a courthouse police officer armed with you at the time.
There was an officer with me. I asked him to go with me.
So you came up to Commander Fitzpatrick with an armed officer?
All right.
All right. George, please.
I don't know. Recess means take 10. Are we then? I don't think we're done for the day. I think they're coming back in. No, there's a formal dismissal of the jury.
Okay.
At the end of the day, the judge says, You dismiss for the day. You don't have to talk to anybody. You don't have to discuss this. You don't have to watch TV. So that hasn't happened. You haven't given them that cautionary warning.
It seemed like he just wanted to interrupt man, didn't he?
Rick is trying to thought. Rick is here. Yes, sir.
Take care.
Thanks for being here.
Okay, we'll see you later.
Yes, sir. Take care.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Well, the aggravated perjury charge is gone. Judge, steal that away. I think the other ones are just destroyed. I don't know.
The jury's paying attention, aren't they?
Paying real close attention. The woman stuff. Obviously, he does not have the ability to act on his own behalf. And he's admitted doing that a number of times. And the people are going to want to, and the purpose of having other people decide this is it's got a purpose. So that's not one man making a decision like that.
I'm going to give on my body.
Okay. I'll be here. Thank you.
mentioned in the complaint. No.
I was actually right on high school and you can read it. I was taking a little boy into it. You have been sorry for it.
It's a fine thing. So how about you? How you doing?
Well, deposition's on time.
Some people say it's really the technology is okay in certain instances, but everything's broken in this world. So I'm doing the everything else is broken. So
done with my tempo, so I thought I'd want to say you have one to film. It's not the way you're shifting.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to be able to do it by the way.
All rise for the judge.
Talking to Mr. Fitzpatrick in February, you had an armed officer standing there with you. That's correct. So you testified that you felt harassed, threatened, the other various adjectives in the statute. Did you ever contact the police about any of the activities of Commander Tech?
No, sir.
Other than, you know, having him removed from the building there.
I didn't have him removed from the building.
But you never called the police or reported any of his activities in regard to that you're alleging in support of the harassment or softening charges?
No, the police, no, sir.
Mr. Patrick, on the other hand, actually did, isn't that correct?
Did what?
The documents, most of the documents and allegations and exhibits that we have looked at were directed towards various law enforcement officials, correct?
Yes.
FBI, Chief Police, Ziegler, and Athens.
He's filed various things with various law enforcement. Is that against the various law enforcement?
He's asking law enforcement to look at this stuff.
I suppose that's what Mike's saying.
And regarding the you mentioned that the commander actually said, I believe, that Commander Fitzpatrick was stating that he was going to have certain people arrested during your testimony. Do you recall that?
I believe so.
I just want to clarify. There's nothing in any of these petitions where Commander Fitzpatrick actually says, I'm going to have people arrested. Is that correct?
I don't know that. I have no recollection of that exact statement.
Isn't it true that everywhere that Commander Fitzpatrick mentions arrests in these documents, he's actually making a request to the law enforcement officials who have the authority to arrest people?
I'm calling for the, I think his phrase is, I'm calling for the arrest, the arrest of so-and-so, and I'm assuming he's addressing that to the people who sent the petition to, who can be law enforcement officers alongside.
So he never actually told you that he was going to have anybody arrested at some point in the future. He's actually asking.
No, sir, I didn't say that.
He's directing his petition to people who have the authority to make these arrests, correct?
Seems to, yeah.
But he's not saying he's going to do any arresting.
I don't think so. No.
Made what I consider to be a false statement, and
that it was now retaliated, but the, all of that is followed back, if you will. There was no jail order that Matthew Brown, he had been there four times and had not hired you anyway. Made one statement that towards a crime that at least we thought that we had jurisdiction.
So a lot of these petitions, the earlier petitions, had allegations against the President of the United States, against the various judges, and all those sorts of things. Were those things that came into your mind, or even the jury's mind, whenever they're considering credibility of the witness?
Sure. And I don't know if you...
Objection, Your Honor.
He can only speak for what was going on in his mind about the credibility of the witness. He can't speak about what was going through the minds of the other judges.
So that part of the thought process that you went through had to do with credibility of the person that's presenting him, that being the defendant?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And what were some of the issues of credibility that you had come up to up until the last three or four times he brought these to you?
Well, I think I dealt with the false, whatever you would say, the statement that were not true. There was a, I think I had a recollection that there was a court of, I don't know if Mr. Fitzpatrick was aware of it, but I know that he had been, I think he had been there. I thought he had been here anyway earlier, before I was the grand jury warden, at least speaking to the poor person at that time about these federal charges against the president. And I believe that he knew that he did not have jurisdiction over that. And I believe that he is entitled. I don't know that for a fact, but that was my belief.
So the objection, Your Honor, motion to strike.
Credibility, explain to the jury, credibility has to do with whether a person is believable or not believable.
Correct.
At this point, after all these petitions and all these things, that it was part of your thought process that this petitioner, this patron, just is not credible. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Now, let's talk about these petitions again. And we were talking to the defense that asked you about petitions, and he kept saying that there are facts in petitions. Were there any? Tell us the difference between an allegation and a fact.
Well,
objection, Your Honor.
Were there any facts that were presented in any of these petitions?
Objection, Your Honor. The petitions speak for themselves at this point.
Now, I think this witness can answer this question. This is something that's absolutely relevant, and he was there. He was the grand jury foreman. He's read the knowledge of
it. You could draw me something to believe in.
What?
Your own conclusion, sir.
My conclusion was that there was no discussion in the grand jury room. Can I talk about that, Your Honor?
Let me ask you this question. In this way, you talked about several times, maybe it's clear up in my mind. You've said sometimes, Mr., what actually did you do physically with the petitions that Mr. Fitzpatrick presented to you, that you say you presented to the grand jury? What actually happened to you?
When he would present them to me,
yes.
I would walk into the grand jury room.
And what did you do next?
Either pick a panel, or the panel was already paneled. I would let them decide whether they wanted to make copies of the petition or whether they wanted to.
What exactly did you tell the jury about Mr. Fitzpatrick's petition?
Mr. Fitzpatrick has a petition here that he would all like for all of us to hear in order to determine whether he should be allowed to come himself and bring evidence that he's references or that he's not identified the petition.
Okay. How many times did you tell that various grand jury?
Four.
Four times. What happened on the first time?
There was no evidence.
Well, then, I mean, with the actual petition,
it was presented to the grand jury.
It's in the panel.
On that occasion, I think it had attachments, and I read the petition to the grand jury.
All of it?
All of it. And then we...
And then what happened? You read it to the grand jury? What did the grand jury do?
Well, it took a few minutes, and we passed the petition around.
All right.
So that everyone would have an opportunity to look at it.
All right.
And then we had some discussion.
All right.
And then...
We did a discussion, and then what was the end result?
The end result was that the grand jury, which the 12, I think there were 12 members there, there was not one member that wished to hear him further.
All right. Now go to the second time. You came to you and presented the petition to you. What did you do with the petition?
I took the petition to, I think that was a three-person panel.
All right.
Inside the grand jury room.
What happened when you got to the three-person panel?
I believe that petition we had copies. And then we brought three copies in, and we all read the petition in silence until some readers are fast, some are slow.
All right.
We finished the petition, and we had a discussion about what was in the petition and what had been presented to us and what was the ultimate
outcome.
No one wished to hear from Mr. Pitt this passing further. We didn't mind anyone.
Now let's go to the third petition.
The third petition, Mr. Fitzpatrick has presented the petition. I took the petition into the grand jury room. I believe we got
a copy.
And we all reviewed, and there were three, that particular time, there were three jurors plus myself. We read his petition. After everybody had finished reading, we discussed his petition, and then we determined we did not wish to hear further evidence from him. So it was.
Okay. And now the last one. What happened with the last one?
The last one, Mr. Fitzpatrick presented his petition. It's my recollection that another person read the petition to the panel that time.
All clear.
Yes.
All right.
And then the petition, and I believe there were some exhibits that were passed around and reviewed. And when everybody had enough time to look at all the exhibits, we then discussed the petition, what was in it, what was not in it. And the conclusion was that no one wished to hear further from Mr. Fitzpatrick.
Did that petition accuse you of being an illegal?
Yes.
So the grand jury heard this out. The grand jury, somebody read to the grand jury that Mr. Fitzpatrick accused you of being an illegal person.
Yes.
And after that, the grand jury decided what action the grand jury take on that.
The grand jury did not wish to hear the petition part.
Let me just go one other area. I want to go to these orders of protection. Petition for order of protection that counsel asked you about. Petition for order of protection are, can you, those are statements or allegations made by the defendant. Is that correct?
By Mr. Fitzpatrick.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there a judge or a jury or a grand jury or panel that hears any evidence, or they just use those? Judge, did you use that petition to make the determination?
It's not understood that it's used as sworn petition, right? The determination seems to wait after that it worked.
Objection, Your Honor. Motion to strike. Doesn't have personal knowledge of this.
I'll have it, Your Honor.
All right. You said on redirect that Mr. Fitzpatrick refused to go by the rules. Isn't it true that you've testified that you refused to go by the rules on at least, or on more than one occasion?
Yes, but that may I explain my answer?
If counsel, the court gives you an attorney an opportunity to ask the following.
No, I've got a lot to explain the answer anytime.
It was a yes or no question, Your Honor. This is cross. This is recross.
That's why he has a right to answer this.
You can answer the question, sir.
You can answer the question
Yes, Your Honor.
But he also asked to have an opportunity to explain that, and he has an absolute right to, Your Honor.
I'll ask him, Mr. Moody. Go ahead. Thank you. Now, you, on several occasions, talked about what happened during the grand jury proceeding, during your direct exam, or during your testimony. Isn't it true that there's a rule that specifically prohibits you and any other grand jury member from talking about anything that happened during the grand jury proceedings?
I believe there is a rule, unless the court orders that.
Grand jury proceedings are secret.
Yes.
And you violated that rule several times today, haven't you?
I think I looked once at the judge and said, can I talk about that?
Yeah, on the last time, but there have been other several occasions where you talked about what someone said or what you said to the grand jury. And based on that, I'd like to ask the judge for an opportunity to ask Mr. Cunningham what he told the grand jurors about Mr. Fitzpatrick, specifically during the January 2014 grand jury proceedings when Mr. Fitzpatrick's petition was not even... received in any way, shape, or form, specifically blocked by Mr. Cunningham. And sealed petition, correct?
I believe
that that seal was never broken, correct?
I don't know. I didn't.
So the petition was never presented in any way to the grand jury in January 2014, correct? And yet you told the brand new, these were brand new grand jurors, correct? Had never met before January 2014.
Correct.
And you told them what. What did you tell them about Mr. Fitzpatrick?
Well, when the grand jury was in panel, it's my recollection, January was our first meeting. And as part of that meeting, we always do a sort of an orientation about what kind of cases that we'll hear, what kind of cases that come forward. What the grand jury can expect to hear throughout the year. And one of the things that I've covered in one part of the orientation was that Mr. Fitzpatrick had appeared on previous attempts, previous times. I don't think I've said how many, but that we talked about how that would be handled in terms of when somebody comes, calling Mr. Fitzpatrick. And been there before, and that I'm not even, and that he was out there, that I expected him to present a petition that day. I'd seen him that morning before we began the orientation process, and then he wasn't discussed again until I went out and we had our exchange, and I came back in at that point, and I said, Mr. Fitzpatrick has. And if he does not wish to deliver his petition to me, let him deliver straight to the grand jury. And I told him that if he didn't want to follow the rules, that I was adjourning the grand jury for today. And I did so. And that's when what I told him. And I think you've got a tape where I went back in the grand jury room, called him, and come right back out. And that's when I said, clear the hallway. And I went back in, I went clear the hallway, and one lady. It was in the panel, I don't know what her name is. She said, should we be afraid of this man? And I said, I don't believe he's violent or something like that. I don't exactly know how I responded to that, but it was not that I didn't tell her anything that would be bad about Mr. Fitzpatrick. We did talk about in the orientation. About some earlier, about Mr. Fitzpatrick's history.
Is that what you want to talk about?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, go. You can
talk like that, sir. When I told him that Mr. Fitzpatrick had been there on two or three occasions, and they told him before, I don't remember what I told him, whatever, or previous occasions or four occasions, I don't remember how I phrased that. But I did tell him that Mr. Fitzpatrick had had some issues with the grand jury in Monroe County, and that he had attempted some activity that had disrupted the grand jury there, and that he had been charged previously, and I thought he had been convicted as a result of something that had happened in Monroe County, but I didn't know what charge. I truly didn't know, so I didn't know what to tell him.
Now, let's be clear. You don't have any personal knowledge of any of these facts, correct?
No,
sir. This is what you were referring
to. This is what I read in the newspaper and what Judge Rawson told me.
And you were telling this to the grand jurors in January during the proceedings?
Well, not during the proceedings, but during the orientation when they asked me about what would have asked me. I said, for instance, there's a fellow here this morning. I think he's probably going to present a petition. I don't know exactly what I said, but that, let me give you some background on him, and that's what I did.
And didn't you tell those grand jurors that Mr. Fitzpatrick wanted to have certain individuals arrested?
I don't recollect if I did. I'm sure I probably did, but I don't have any recollection.
Now, these grand jurors in January, they're the same grand jurors that indicted Mr. Commander Fitzpatrick in March, correct?
I don't know that. I wasn't there in March. I would assume that it's a March panel and that some of them are the same.
The January panel is generally primarily made up of people in the
March. Oh, the panel. First, third, I would assume it's the same, but I resigned from the grand jury and was not there, so I don't know.
I understand. And you did testify that at least one of those grand jury members had some doubt about or some question about whether or not Mr. Fitzpatrick was dangerous.
Well, I did ask that, yes, sir.
Based on what you were telling her?
I'm not sure. I would assume it was partially based on that. Okay. I don't know if she had any previous red flags on Mr. Fitzpatrick or not.
Defense requests the court to take judicial notice of Tennessee Statute 3916.509.
No, I'll read it from the jurors.
That was your decision, by yourself, correct, in both occasions? That's correct. And no panel was ever seated, according to state law, in January and February. Correct?
No panel was ever part of the petitions, but I still believe it was in compliance with state law.
Now, in support of the harassment, stalking, and extortion, if you will. Excuse me for just one moment. Let me grab the statutes here. Harassment is 3917.308, and it specifically says, the stalking charge. Stalking, 3917.315, is a willful course of conduct involving repeated or continuing harassment. Harassment is defined in the same exact section as conduct directed towards a victim. And it goes on, but the second sentence in this is, harassment does not include constitutionally protected activity or conduct that serves a legitimate, or conduct that serves a legitimate purpose, Your Honor. Every single document, and every single petition, every act of the defendant that has been given is a constitutionally protected activity. Specifically, I believe, every single one of them has been labeled a petition to the government. Now, as we discussed this morning in chambers, obviously it's true that a law is not protected speech. And if it's within a petition, it can be that can certainly support a charge of stalking or harassment. But a lie is not the same as a false statement. A lie is evidence of a false statement with evidence that the person making the false statement knew the statement to be false at the time they made it. There's been absolutely no evidence, Your Honor, that Commander Fitzpatrick, and I mean, there's a fairly short list of statements that were, after cross-examination, left as false statements. And none of them have had any evidence showing that Commander Fitzpatrick lied in any of those documents. Now, therefore, every petition for redress of grievance, petition to the government for redress of grievances is explicitly excluded, cannot support, can't be outlawed, period, under the constitutional law argument. And the statute itself says harassment does not include constitutionally protected activity or conduct that serves a legitimate purpose. All of the evidence is constitutionally protected and or certainly were intended to serve a legitimate purpose. And there's just no way that the stalking or harassment charges can be sent on to the jury, Your Honor. There's been no evidence that supports them. I also wanted to make the point that the petitions, we don't have to show that the defendant's petitions were true at all. Everything in them can be completely false. Their statements of opinion, their statements of law, a lot of it was simply stuff that other people had written and he was trying to make people aware of. But Your Honor, no matter how much that stuff might be annoying, if it is a petition to the government for redress of grievances, it's constitutionally protected. If it's constitutionally protected, it can't support harassment or stalking. It certainly has a legitimate purpose. They just completely lack all evidence on those counts. Now, regarding extortion, same argument. The statute doesn't explicitly disclaim acts that are constitutionally protected. However, as we know, any law, under Marbury v. Madison, any law that outlaws something that's constitutionally protected is void, at least as applied. And in this case, again, same argument. Everything that is being alleged in support of all of the evidence that's been entered in support of the extortion charge is a petition for redress of grievances to the government. It's constitutionally protected. I haven't heard any argument or evidence to the contrary. Also on the extortion charge, there's no threat here. There was never a threat made. In order to show extortion, you have to show that a person uses coercion. Coercion requires a threat. A threat, under law, is, and this is actually stated by opposing counsel on in his opening statement, a threat has to be shown. A threat under law is communication of an intent to do something illegal. Every activity that's been alleged and is in evidence is protected as constitutionally protected activity. So therefore, not only has there not been an illegal act, more the point that I'm making here is there has to have been a communication that if you don't do X, I'll do Y. There has to be a threat that if you don't do something or do something that you have a legal right to do, I'm going to try and harm you by an illegal act. There was never a threat here. The closest they got was Mr. Cunningham testified that there was that Mr. Kirkpatrick, or the commander Fitzpatrick, threatened to have people arrested. But on cross-examination, he admitted there was no threat. It was simply Commander Fitzpatrick going to the people who have the authority to do that and asking them to do it. He never said, if you don't do X, I'm going to have you arrested. In fact, Mr. Cunningham did exactly that in February. He says, if you come back, basically, you're committing a felony, and if you come back, I'm going to have you arrested. And that's exactly what he did. Mr. Cunningham's more guilty of extortion than Commander Fitzpatrick is. Commander Fitzpatrick never made a threat. There's no evidence whatsoever of a threat being made. No communication of intent to harm if you don't do something. He simply said, you're doing these things and I'm reporting you. He didn't say, I'm going to report you. He said, I am reporting you. I mean, he didn't even say it, he just did it. Extortion requires a communication of a threat. There's no evidence of that. That's all I have, Your Honor.
Your Honor, please, the court, I think what we started talking about count two in regards to the aggravated perjury, and I think the only suggestion was the materiality of the facts alleged. And I suspect, I think we had an argument that simply because the judge did not believe the defendant's false allegations, that therefore it's not material. But however, that's not the standard, that's not the test. Test is whether or not the statements alleged would have had been believed, would have caused an order of protection to go down. That's what the whole order of protection was about these false allegations. And they're under oath, they're material, and they're in connection with a proceeding, an ex parte proceeding. So I'm not sure I follow that line of thinking. Now, in regards to the harassment, stalking, and extortion, and get counsel's argument correct, is that lying is a constitutionally protected right. And that is just not the law. His right to do something, some rights are protected, but the right to extort and to lie to get his way are not constitutionally protected. The facts are before the jury. The jury may determine whether or not we believe those facts are constitutional if they believe that Mr. Fitzpatrick was telling the truth. But if they figure that Mr. Fitzpatrick is lying, then it's not constitutional protected. Your Honor, in this case, the stalking issue, we have shown a sequence of events that lasted for 2 years, a course of conduct that got from a mild to worse, worse, to the point at point in 2014 when the defendant actually went to two judges, attempted to get orders of protection in order to get his way. And that course of conduct from 2012 to 2014 is clearly established. We insist that under the statute, that certainly goes under the definition of harassment. Stalking is clear. And here's the thing about extortion. The extortion issue is what we gained. Did he gain? Not what he gained was trying to get Mr. Cunningham off of the grand jury so he could come in and tell the grand jury how it's supposed to work. Those were his language, his petition. I will show you what you're supposed to do. That was what the defendant was trying to get. That was extortion. That was what this was about. And unfortunately, in some way, the defendant has gotten his way because Mr. Cunningham has since resigned. I don't think there's any rule for rebuttal at this point, Your Honor.
Your Honor, the aggravated burglary, regarding the aggravated burglary charge, I agree on the definition of materiality. That's not the point. The point is, Your Honor's ruling was that the denial of the order, petition for order of protection was based on the fact that the order of protection or the petition lacked the domestic relationship required under the statute. Therefore, any other statements are immaterial. That was Your Honor's instruction to the jury. It seems ridiculous that, absolutely, materiality, if indeed you can consider the other things, they might or may not be material, but that's not what we're doing here. The fact is that Your Honor ruled that the issue was the domestic relationship didn't exist, therefore nothing else said matters. That was the ruling, nothing else is material. And the opposite, I did not say that lying is a constitutionally protected act. I've twice now specifically said the opposite, lying is not a constitutionally protected act. But there's a difference between lying and making false statements unknowingly. And there must be, making a false statement, a statement of opinion that's wrong is absolutely the core of First Amendment protection. Making a statement that's wrong is protected. Making a statement that's wrong, knowing that it's wrong, is not protected. There has been no evidence that Commander Fitzpatrick knew that any of the statements identified by the prosecution in their case as false, that Fitzpatrick at that time knew that they were false. In fact, quite the opposite. On one occasion, Mr. Cunningham admitted that he thought that Fitzpatrick probably did believe what he was saying. You can't lie if you think you're telling the truth. You might be wrong, but if you're wrong, it's still constitutionally protected. There's been no evidence to support that he lied. The fact that Mr. Cunningham felt harassed is not what we have to, you know, rebut here. Mr. Cunningham very well might have felt harassed. The fact is that all of the things that caused Mr. Cunningham to feel harassed are constitutionally protected acts. They cannot support harassment, stalking, or extortion. That's the point. And there was no threat. That point was not even addressed by Mr. Carter. There was never a threat. If you don't do X, I'm going to do Y. He simply did the things that he thought was right. That's all I have.
Motion to adjourn on count three. The remainder of the indictment, the other back, counts 1 through 4, motion to be denied. Stand, Mr. Fitzpatrick, and raise your right hand. So I'm sweat testimony about you being the truth, the whole truth, and none of those truth.
I do.
Fitzpatrick, do you understand the state is rested in this case, and now it's time for the defense to put on any proof that they wish to do so? You understand that in the Constitution you have a right not to testify in this case?
I understand.
You understand that no one can compel you to take the witness stand and give evidence against yourself. You understand that?
I understand that.
Do you understand that also you have a constitutional right to take the witness stand and testify on your own behalf?
Agreed.
Do you understand that nobody can make those decisions for you? Do you understand?
I do.
Even if you talk to me and take the advice, you can listen to the advice of your attorney, and you understand that final analysis is you must be the one that makes the decision whether you take the witness stand or you not take the witness stand. Do you understand?
I do.
All right.
Your Honor, a couple other issues I'd like to bring up real quick.
You can let the court know the first thing tomorrow morning about what the decision is.
Hold it. What?
I said that this court is constitutionally required to
give you that, what we call a moment of warning.
Right.
And you must acknowledge to the court that you understand that you have a right to testify or you have a right not to testify.
I've just done that.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. And I said to you, you can tell the court tomorrow what your decision will be about testifying or not testifying.
Okay.
You know, a couple of issues. I mentioned earlier, I just wanted to make the point and make the record real clear. At least on two occasions during this trial today, there was something that Mr. Fitzpatrick deemed, I guess, favorable to him. He raised his hand as if like a touchdown, and those are absolutely inappropriate. And I've asked the court to instruct him about those kinds of antics before the court.
I don't know that I would observe that, but you're not making motions like that, Mr. Fitzpatrick.
I understand.
Another thing is that counsel from time to time has brought up statutes and stuff. It's part of the rule that they're going to use something that they provide a copy of the opposing counsel, and I appreciate that courtesy.
Two questions, Your Honor. First, Mr. Cunningham mentioned to the jury that Commander Fitzpatrick had gone to Annapolis. This morning's ruling was that because Commander Fitzpatrick is wearing his uniform.
He could say his education in the city of Annapolis.
Okay. And is that going to open up his...
No.
Thank you, Your Honor. And my other question, I just want to clarify, so count three has been dismissed.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. That's all I have.
All rise for the court. Be in recess till 9:00 in the morning. The court will be live.
I was organized this morning.
That was this morning. I should have proved it down and talked about it. Okay, that's okay.
Thank you. Did you say we could do this?
Absolutely. I'm locked in the courtroom. The only people that can hear are us at 8:00. Please
feel free.
Go.
Right over stuff together.
She said she's been locked in court for leaving soon.
No, I need it. I'm sorry. Have you gotten to, or where are you at now?
In the city? I think I've only watched about 2, maybe 3 days. Ruben just watched more.
Other than Walter Frank, are you bringing the testify? I hate the nerve.
I don't think he has.
Well, those two check marks are.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
Ms. Carter, I need to talk to the judge real quick.
I will. You need the court report?
No.
Yeah, it's.
It's amazing that he knows that he don't have it. I think he should dismiss it.
Correct.
I mean, it's.
I wonder if
they
have arranged. Did you?
I'm sorry.
pray.
I mean, it's clear that the law says they don't have it.
Right.
That's simple. It's a protective, the judge just saying, don't worry about the law.
Exactly.
That's what he said.
The judge is part of the problem.
But that's the true most times. That's correct.
Time is 1800 hours. Actually, it's 1759. It's Monday afternoon, the 23rd of June, 2014.
Thank you. Was he there all night?
He was there.
Thank you. During the Friday afternoon.
This is driving me crazy. I can't hear him. I can't hear the judge.
We're talking.
By the way, thank you so much for making sure this.
Working fine Friday afternoon. It didn't work all good last week. It was in and out, so I don't know if there's a fuse or short. I did call the company today to try to get somebody up here.
That's the guy who was rolling around here. Right?
Who's that?
This man looking at this.
I have a thingy right now. I've been moving around turning it off and plugging it to work. I'm going to unplug everything tonight and hope to have me busy Saturday morning. But after we had it like 5 years or something, we quit just paying the
maintenance
on it because it was $5,000 or something a year and I counted it in Latin because they go pay $500 service cost and $5,000 a year. So anyway, today they was going to try to walk me through it on the internet.
That's
if
what,
they
a service call? So.
And
I bought it. Oh, they're ready to move into a new building. They wouldn't talk to me on the phone. It's like $175 an hour. They wouldn't talk to me on the phone today until I got it approved in my finance. And to be honest, I haven't had time to go do that today.
Thank you.
Try.
No, thank you. Go to the attempt.
Actually, there was never a
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You go. Mr. Perry. Actually, before I got elected, there had never been any kind of amplification system ever.
Talk louder.
It's just, it's just real bad. So, actually, there is.
Take care. Take care. Take care, Jeff. Yeah, I'm over there. That's where this thing probably going to get settled. And Blackwood's making all the wrong moves. I'm sorry?
Blackwood? Is that the
thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Obviously. Fine.
Yeah. We need to do this thing tonight. Honestly, I'm seriously thinking about just resting, and you know, I'm going to have to think about what I need. We've had everything that we needed.
Win right there, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
The jury does not know that Mr. Cunningham is illegal. They don't know that he is not a juror.
Well,
and not that they need to. Don't
they don't need to.
There you go.
And you're not going to convince me of that. Because they're, if we go there, it'll turn into, and
absolutely
we'll confuse the jury, and they'll end up thinking that that's the issue they have to decide, rather than what they actually have to decide.
Okay.
I think you made the issue pretty clear.
The thing that I'm concerned about is that, you know, you never want to let a jury not hear from the defendant unless there's a damn good reason for it, because then the jury goes into the deliberations and goes, well, why didn't we hear from him? It doesn't matter what the judge says. They still are like, well, why didn't he testify? We have to think about
that. That really is you selling him and saying there was no reason for him to testify. You had everything, and to save all this time, we're just showing you there is no evidence here.
Well, you can make the same argument to the jury in closing that you just made to the judge. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
the
I will.
The question really comes into how much can they bring in that has no relevance in
they
the
only
if had you did put
one witness, for goodness sakes. The state arrested after Cunningham, and Cunningham didn't do anything to incriminate me.
I understand.
Are there other witnesses to help you?
Willis, which just, you know, supports the fact that Fitzpatrick has been trying, and that's actually, I think I will call him. At least then we'll have presented a witness.
I think it opens too many doors that they can just leave to make him look wrong. That won't help. I'm just thinking, if I was sitting on a jury not knowing what I know, but how
it's the rule on defense, the rule on in any presentation, but especially on defense, keep it simple. If you've got a winning argument, stick to that. Don't let the jury think that it's about something else. The only danger there, though, is you've got to actually have evidence supporting your arguments in closing. Because if you don't, there's even one thing missing. You know, you can't go back and backfill it. You can't undo it. That's why this job's so
you
stressful.
You have one good juror. I mean,
do
I
we?
Hope. Yeah, I hope.
Oh.
I know him well.
Oh, okay.
So, like I say, he looked right at us and nodded.
Good.
Works.
That's fabulous.
It works for the county. As a state inspector.
We not only have to do the
okay. But
I was
he
so
is
glad.
He is an
and he has a concealed
thinker.
Carry badge. I almost didn't ask him about it because I figured they'd get rid of him. But they think they've got the argument, oh, Fitz tried to take away Cunningham's right to bear arms, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, you gotta understand.
I've talked politics with him a little bit. Not a lot. We've had much. We've talked politics. He's not. They're a man to where he does whatever they tell him. In fact, as an inspector, he does a lot that they don't like as far as he helps the contractors and he works around, he skirts
you,
around the
you board. Missed opening, didn't you? Or no, Bois d'Ire?
Yeah.
Bois d'Ire. That was my favorite part of the day. The prosecutor asks the jury, the prospective jurors, is there anybody who's ever, you know, real unhappy with what the government does? And I raise my And what was golden is, he says, well, I'd like the record to reflect that Mr. Urian raised his hand, and this isn't funny, you know, and this is a serious matter. I'm thinking, yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
Blankety-blank serious matter of what the government does to people all the time. Don't even get me started about it. It ain't funny.
Well, I'll tell you what, I would be real.
I can cuss like a sailor.
I would be real.
I don't anymore.
And being a sailor, me too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Go all the way.
Heard it. And then, I would have thought I'd throw some expletives about that problem.
Pointed if Gene did not see through it because he's a fairly independent, sharp person.
All right.
So
that's
great
news.
I hope that he's I think he'll speak his mind. Now, what his mind is, I don't know. But he knows my dad, he knows me, and we've always got along really well.
I know. The one thing that I wish I had done different was I should have done an offer of proof. When the judge shut me up on going into all of the charges, I should have done an offer of proof. That way at least we've been on the record. But, you know, I mean, I could make those arguments anyway. I really don't need to have him admit that, yeah, these facts, I mean, he's already admitted. It's just, I really want... That threw me off. You could tell I was off my game right from the game across because I was planning on... Going through there were 5 felonies and 3 misdemeanors that man has admitted to. Now, I'm not saying you're going to get a conviction or even that the spirit of the law necessarily fits. But neither does, I mean, not the whole point is he's the one that's doing the same thing to Fitz. If you're going to try and say, oh, well, you know, if you look at it and squint real well, this fits all the elements of extortion, for God's sakes.
I think one.
Well, if you're going to do that, you've just admitted to this, and this, which you can go to jail for 15 years for.
Well, let me tell you one other thing I think will be important for the jury to hear a little bit of, and that is the fact that his argument were against Jeff Cunningham, and Jeff Cunningham was leading the jury.
Okay.
and you really lead his temperature. He was giving
the
Eastern
Bank a chance.
Oh, that was golden. You talk about appealable issue. We had Jeff Cunningham confirm what I was trying to prove last week at the hearing, that he had a witness or a juror who indicted, who asked if Fitzpatrick was a dangerous person based on stuff that he was saying, and he admitted he was not supposed to be talking about that stuff right then.
Which is admission of a criminal act.
And that's one that I hadn't even listed.
Now, again, this gets back to the issue of, well, I was going to get you real one day. Who's my accuser?
Who's what?
Who's accusing me? Where do these charges come from?
I know.
Cunningham,
jury's not going
I
to
thought about that.
He never,
exactly.
He
that's
never,
why I don't want to get into it.
I know. Okay, so then ask him this question.
Jury,
who swore out a criminal complaint?
There was no complaint.
Exactly.
There was a and the presentment...
There's no injured party.
The presentment was... I still don't know who did the presentment.
Exactly.
It had to have been Calvin Rockwell, who had no personal knowledge of anything.
Would you not want to bring him in? Because if he says he's defended and there was no knowledge...
Who's the injured party?
So I'm going to close that door.
What? Who's the injured party?
Well, Fitzpatrick. Who's the one that claims to be?
Well, I'm saying the government's case. Who does the government represent as the person I'm supposed to have injured?
Fitzpatrick.
I'm Cunningham.
I'm tired.
Well, I'll stop.
We'll see
you. Counselor, you knocked the ball out of the park today.
Thank you. I wish
you... No, you didn't. No, you did a wonderful job. You did a great job.
I did everything I wanted to do, except for that.
No, yeah, we're good to go.
Pretty much everything I wanted.
Good to go. And if there's a conviction tomorrow, this thing's... The appeal is
cool. Appeal. All
right. I do think you need to get the turn.
Take care, sir.
They find you don't have the right to address the government when that's going wrong. And so this, you need to hit them from the point of, this is important to you. This is your case.
Even if you're wrong, even if you're bringing to the government a bunch of allegations that turn out to not be a crime, even if you're bringing to the government a petition that turns out there's nothing that you have a right to have done, the fact is you have a right to petition.
I think Gene Warren.
You're pointing my finger.
That's what I'm thinking.
The jury was asked, do you believe Mr. Fitzpatrick is innocent? He was innocent.
Yeah.
Okay, we're that. Well, I'm an innocent man sitting here. I haven't admitted any criminal acts, and the government hasn't proven any. In the meantime, the guy who they brought as the only witness against me is the criminal actor here by his own admission.
Here's my only concern. My only concern is that they're going to think to themselves, well, I would feel harassed if Fitzpatrick had done that to me, the things that he did to me. And therefore, he's guilty of harassment.
Then you need to tell them.
That's what dumb jurors do.
Well, then you need to tell them that the reason Cunningham felt the way that he did is because he knew he was committing crimes, which he's admitted to. He's admitted to his criminal actions here. This is what Commander Fitzpatrick was bringing to the attention of the grand jury. This is what Cunningham was blocking. See, the threat, the harassment, all that nonsense comes from that. All those bad things could have happened to him financially, professionally. It's because he was about to be exposed to, in January, February, March, to the grand jury. So the harassment, why didn't you feel that, Bill? Because you were about to be exposed. You were the criminal. It's not that there's anyone who's criminal. You were about...
What harm would it have done to say, you know what? I'm going to refuse myself to let the grand jury hear it.
Exactly. Why didn't Cunningham do that? And you see, the charges for harassment and stalking and extortion come from the threat that Cunningham felt in the moment he was about to be exposed. He didn't complain to the police. He didn't file a criminal complaint against me. He didn't go to anybody. He went to the judges. He said, I'm in trouble. And that's the reason why he stepped down, by the way.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah.
Because he knew.
Right.
So, right? Yeah. And that's the whole point.
We'll talk more. But I'm going to...
She's coming all the way from Maryville.
Okay.
So,
well, thank you. And with a witness, I'm saying to you, whatever decision you make is okay with me. Whether I take the stand or don't take the stand, Linda, is up to Dan. Okay, are you guys talking on the way home? I'm happy as a climate high tide right now.
Okay.
We got everything that we need, either from the motion hearing last week, and they only brought one witness. That tells the jury a lot.
Yeah, well, they did have those other witnesses. But, yeah. I mean, the other two were just basically, yeah, this petition was entered.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The
yeah.
two clerks?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right. Cunningham was not the other.
And Cunningham is the man who's committed the crime. So you can tell the jury, excuse me, the reason Commander Fitzpatrick was coming forward was to expose him for what he's admitted to you here on the stand yesterday. That's why he's taking this action against Mr. Fitzpatrick, because he still stands at criminal accountability for this moment. He can be arrested off the stand right now or out of the over on the prosecution table.
But we don't have to prove that.
No, just tell the jury.
If we go into that, the jury might say, well, I'm not sure that's right. They might argue that it's not true, and then the jury's left with the idea that that's what they have to decide. That's the danger.
Okay.
I got to think about what to present.
Talk to my sister.
Yes, sir.